Yeah, I'm just reading a book. I just bought a book called The New Agrarians. And the guy's name is Alan something or other. But he gives a brief history of how the nation has developed and how farming was affected and the family was affected and so on. And he discusses in this book these different agrarian type people. There's different names for this people that would like to see us get back to the land, to ownership. And
well, even Elto itself is set up as everybody having like a farmette. I mean, I have a horse barn on my property. My mom does. My brother did. All the houses did. And in fact, our property went all the way back to the other fence line, because that was where your horses and everybody had a cow and a chicken and whatnot. So everybody understood where their food came from. And over the years, that has been lost.
Yes, and he goes back into the 1800s and then throughout the 1900s as far as urbanization and industrialization and how it affected people's mentalities. Plus, it just kind of broke the farmer because things became kind of like one-crop industries that they'd create in order to be able to ship it off to other locations. And it was not so much about a region anymore, or even about the United States, but even the Southerners wanted to ship their wool or their cotton over to Europe. And so it started shifting things and the division of labor and all that kind of
Well, the more efficiency of the farm as well, you know, to do one thing better than another guy does something better. And then you have your two entities, and now you're starting, you know, your dairy to the hog and to the, you know.
I don't see a way around developing. However, it's killed a family farm. I mean, that's very hard to run a family farm.
Well, and a lot of people accuse the farm as being factorized or industrialized or whatever. The family farm is gone. But nowadays, the family farm is that 250 cow dairy or 1,200 cow dairy. That's what it, because when your prices don't reflect, you have to get more efficient and get more efficient by becoming bigger.
And by buying the land around you because those farmers can't make it.
Right. And then you get to the renting of farmland as well. So, I mean, there's some people that make their living that they don't have the animals anymore or whatever. They
rent to the local farmer or the guy.
Rent their land out for an income, so it goes back into the rental.
Which then makes it hard for other people to own country land and build a home on it because farmers are trying to gobble up what acreage they can, even because they have to,
and
legality purposes.
It's getting to be where you're seeing $5,000 an acre, if not more, $5,000 to $8,000 an acre, which is hard for anybody to buy. But there's also most townships and states will have laws that you have to have at least 40 acres to build a house now, so that you don't get this happening where farmland is just being eaten up.
Yeah, you know, which I find troubling. On another hand,
yeah.
So anyway, let's keep moving in. That's interesting, and thanks for bringing up the farm thing. And I didn't have any intention of mentioning even this guy in this book. I just got it yesterday, and I've been reading it, and he's. He's kind of pro the way it used to be, but he comments on the different authors and thinkers that are part of that movement, or have been part of that movement. Anyway, most people start with a house, okay? And it's just, this is their property. It's the only, it's the one they live in. It may be the only real estate that they ever own. My dad is a good example. He taught in the public schools. He never owned a house all those years. I read some things and learned some things after I was becoming a young man that I looked at that and thought, boy, that was dumb. He should have probably bought a house if he's paying these rent payments. And it wasn't like we moved around all over like we were army brats or anything like that. He lived in one house. I grew up in one house the whole time, but it was somebody else's property. It wasn't my dad's. And I don't fault him. He provided for us, and he provided for my mom, who still lives even after he's deceased. It's just that He was a renter, and that's okay. The value of this one home property, though, is that it can increase in value over time. But the greatest value, I think, is that the house is where your family lives. It's providing for you and your children's upbringing. It's giving you a domicile to experience all that God meant for a family to experience. It doesn't have to be great. It doesn't have to be big. You got to be able to fit. You know, that's about it. And some people, they grow out of a certain size house pretty quick, and then they start looking for something different. A house, I think we've mentioned this in the past, is a form of wealth storage. Stick to your monthly payments if you are making payments in order to pay for your house. And then over time, you own it completely, right? And you got something to show for that, whether you pass that on to the children or sell and move or whatever the case may be. David Bahnsen, who's a Christian economist, he said he never understood people who look at their house as an investment or who look at their house and try to figure its value, because he kind of felt like this is your home. This is different than thinking about some other form of property or investment. And so I thought, yeah, I get that, and that makes some sense. And so, see, many rent and pay $500 up to $1,200 per month to someone else. I just heard this past week that someone's son was moving out of his apartment complex in Milwaukee, where he was paying $1,200 a month, and they're going to jack the rent up to $1,600 a month. And he thought, no, I can't do this. And so he's moved into his dad's basement. You know? And he'll be able to take that $1,200, maybe give his dad a few hundred, and start building up for something different. But that's craziness to me.
There are, I have one renter now that she lost her husband. She's in the mid-60s. And for her, renting to her is a safety. Because now she doesn't have to worry about Joe Shady Roofing Company putting a roof on for $20,000 and it leaks the next day, or having to replace the water heater.
All those ownership decisions.
All those ownership expenses and decision. I know my partner had a renter, and they were they never owned a house. And his theory was, is if you buy a house for, let's say, $100,000, and you pay on it for 30 years, and let's say you sell it for $200,000, and his philosophy was, well, I lose that interest, or that interest goes to the bank, for one. Two, I never have to pay property taxes. I have no money going into it for repair and maintenance. And I don't have to pay capital gains when I sell. So his philosophy was, I'm going to eat up that $100,000 that I gained. So it's just a different look at it.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting way to look at it. And I think those are decisions you got to weigh.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It could be a stream of income, which is what real estate can be. It's another one of the four or whatever streams of income.
Yeah.
But it can also be stream going right out of your back pocket if
right.
It doesn't work out in your advantage, you know.
Because if you get your mortgage and your rent and your taxes, et cetera, and insurance, and it's so close that when you have one of these taboos, you know, like for an example, my rental had the compressor went out on the air conditioning, but I couldn't just put a new compressor in because it's rated for the coil that goes inside your furnace. And my furnace was too short to put the new coils in, so I had to replace the furnace and the compressor. And that was me helping him cost me $5,000.
Yeah.
And if I didn't help him, it would have cost me $6,500. Now it's a big chunk of change for somebody that's barely making the payments
and
as
the fact,
a car payment.
Yeah.
You know.
But also the fact that you help them might cost you another $1,000 down the road because you screwed something up.
I doubt that. I doubt that very much, but yeah.
So there, a case in point with the rent, though, there are over 43 million households doing this, according to something I've read. But rent is an expense. It's not an income. It doesn't, expenses, we all have expenses, and they're fine. I mean, to buy groceries is an expense, but you got to eat. So,
and then you got to pay sewer to get rid of it.
Yeah. But the renter, he kind of like has stuff, but he just has to move his stuff around with him because he doesn't own property. So he moves his stuff around or gets a rental space or whatever. It's the owner that has the one with the potential stream of income. Two greatest real estate owners in the history of mankind, and forever will be, are Abraham and Jesus, though. And if you looked at Matthew 8:20, it's the verse that says the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head, right? Yet we know, even though Jesus wasn't a property owner, that he owns all things. He's the heir of everything. And so sometimes what you own on earth and do on earth, it may seem slight or it may seem insignificant, but if you're faithful to Christ and his kingdom, that's all that matters. And you will be richly rewarded for it. I always felt like in the beginning of our marriage, we were not wealthy at all. Tracy will tell you that we were very poor. But I was serving in a Christian school. I felt like I was serving God's purposes. And I did that for, I don't know, maybe 4 years or 5 years or something. And then I took on a job with the lock company that I worked for 13 years. And that wasn't the greatest pay at first. It took some time to build up and so on. But I just kind of felt like my heartbeat was for the kingdom of God more than these other things, and especially if I was doing something that was really directly related to the kingdom of God, I didn't concern myself as much with whether we were becoming rich or anything. So, Abraham, on the other hand, is also a great inheritor. We are all considered Abraham's descendants, right? Father Abraham has many sons, and we are one of them. I preached a sermon once that all that we own really belongs to him, in a sense, and to Jesus. And we are like stewards of it because he's our father. He's the great patriarch, if you will. And the Genesis 13 passage is where Abraham is in the land, traveling, had left the Ur of the Chaldeans, right, where his dad and family were, where they probably had property or something. He left and was wandering around in Palestine or the land of Israel or whatever it was called before he got there. And he didn't own any of it. And God took him out in Genesis 13 and said, look up into the sky. And he said, all these things in this land will be yours. Yet he didn't ever experience that in the earth. But he's experienced it since. And will experience it throughout the future for all eternity, in one sense. And so I think I look at that too, and I think it's got to be about the kingdom of God. Otherwise, you can be running and chasing your tail for money, you know. And if you are, it's to your loss, because look at these two inheritors, you know, the greatest land possessors of all time. So we'll get into it a little bit. We're discussing real estate as an additional stream of income. We cannot pretend to give the kind of advice I can, at least, like it's going to be a business for you. I'm the kind of guy, I think Tracy was worse, but I was the kind of guy who originally didn't want to play with houses and hotels in Monopoly because it was confusing, right? Rent now, what is this, property tax? I don't get this. I got to pay what? And I just... you know, I'll buy the property for $27 or whatever, or $400, and then you just tell, here's what you got to pay me for rent when you land on it. I didn't want to develop these things, and I think Tracy still doesn't play with houses and hotels.
Well, we did.
You what?
We did. I started that game at 8 years old. We always bought houses and hotels.
Yeah, good for you. That's why you had a niche for it. But some kids never play that, and really some adults never get into the things that we're going to discuss, and that's fine too. To each his own in one sense. Here's the question, okay, can I afford to buy real estate? E. How's it possible these days to buy a property costing $85,000 or $125,000 or $250,000? Most people don't have that kind of money sitting in a sock drawer, you know.
I think that's where the rentals come in. A lot of my rentals, I would say, is kids coming out of, not just kids, but mostly coming out of high school, coming out of college, just starting a job or whatever. A lot of times it's not until they get married that they have a dual income that they can even start thinking about a house.
Right.
And buying property.
Like your own daughter and her
Aaron
husband.
And Andy, yeah.
And he makes an argument for building up a nest egg before you ever grow up.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever. Maybe working and living at home for another 5 years to see if you can't gain some of that. So your option is either you have it in the sock drawer, right, or you take a loan out. And taking a loan out is going to cost you. And this is, I think, where your friend's idea comes in. Why, you know, if I buy it and I got a 30-year mortgage at 3%, my loan amount was $200,000, but after the end of 30 years, I paid another $103,000 on it. So if I'm selling it for $300,000, I'm not making it anything, really.
Right.
I paid it away in interest. So who, I mean, you still got something, right? But who's the big winner in that scenario? It's the bank, as long as you kept making your payments and they didn't have to bankrupt you.
Right.
Right, or foreclose on you, I should say.
I think that's why it's very important to keep tabs on interest rates and refinance and look at these things. And, you know, if you're a kid that doesn't have a very big credit line yet, you're going to have to pay higher interest to begin 9 times out of 10 because you're going to be considered a high risk if you don't have a credit.
Or you're going to have to, you have to come up with some equity. You have to pay down more or whatever, put something against the loan. Because, I mean, interest rates were like at nothing hardly.
Right.
A couple of years ago. Now they're starting to creep up.
Now they're creeping
reasonably.
Up, which is what you see the home market going back down again now, too. You know? So, yeah.
And you can see here that this chart just gives you, like, at 3%, the same house, same value, cost of the house, $200,000. At 3%, you're going to pay this much in interest over that 30-year period. At 4%, you're going to pay that much in interest. At 5%, and that percentage makes a huge deal of difference. And the 30-year mortgage, I mean, stretched out, it just builds. And you have in the far right-hand side what they're calling the tipping point. I think that's basically when you start paying more on your principal than on your interest.
Right.
It took you 7 years to get to the point where now you're finally paying a little more principal than you were interest. Up to that point, the bulk of it was in interest.
Well, it's the same as your car loan or whatever. You know, if you look at your car loan when you first buy that car and you're paying $500, you know, your first payment's almost $300 to $400 is just interest alone because they get theirs first. And it's not until you're getting down to the last 40 months or at month 40, if you're doing a 60-month, that you start seeing that change. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're getting the $300 going towards your car and you know, the other car's going to interest.
Which makes the argument again for paying cash or being able to afford the thing outright without getting into the, I'm going to give, me and the bank are going to own this.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give a lot of money to the bank
for
the use of their money, which is their money. So am I willing to take out a loan from someone? From whom? Dad and Mom? That might be a better angle, right? Grandpa, Uncle Joe, or the bank? Is paying for money as interest on a loan an option for you? Okay, so wisdom, biblical wisdom, would say the rich rules over the poor and the borrower is slave of the lender. I'm all for not owing people money. there's no greater feeling in the world than when you get to a point where you like made your last house payment and you think, this is mine, free and clear. I don't owe anybody anything. And except for what I believe to be the theft of property tax, where you're paying the government rent to live in your house that you pay for all these years. I think there should be a better tax to deal with taxes than property tax. And if you didn't support some of what they do with property taxes in the first place, it probably wouldn't be near as high, which is typically public education, you know, they could support it with it. If you do, next page, if you agree to a loan, how will you come up with the money to make your monthly payments? And this is the million-dollar question. And we start to think about, well, what do the experts say when they're trying to make a house purchase decision that they plan to rent that they're not going to live in? The bank requires a percentage of property paid by you, which is like 20% in some cases. I don't know if it was up to 30% after 2008 and 2009's rough waters. But they weren't given loans for property at all, hardly, because
they built
themselves a monster and it had to get killed.
There was a time before Fannie Mae happened that, you know, if you had equity in another house, you know, you could use that as your down payment. And they really seem to be shying away from that.
Not completely. I know that we had discussed with the banker we typically use, which is like Oricon Bank, I think, for property purchases. And he said that, you got other equity here. I'm not worried about it. You know, it's like as long as he felt like he could, you know, sink his, you know, the claws into some other property in case
right.
we went belly up, and that he could access.
And essentially that's what you're risking in at that
right,
point.
Right, right, right. So, yeah, and then there's the big, we got to step back and be big boys and realize that this is not our money, so we can't call all the shots, right? If we're taking out a loan, then we answer to the bank or the dad or the whatever that we're taking the loan out from.
For a secondary property, don't you have to do 30%? Like, if it's not your primary residence, the percentage goes up, doesn't it, on the down payment?
I think it is higher. I don't really know.
I think I thought the idea was because it is risk, the bank sees it as riskier. Because you're not living there, you don't have to have it. So you're more likely to default, so they would require a greater percentage, but I don't know.
I think it depends on cash flow at that point, too.
Okay.
Equity, how much the appraisal goes for versus how much you're paying for it and what your cash flow is on it, that will make a difference.
When you say what your cash flow is on it, what do you mean by that?
Well, if you're buying a place and it cash flows, means that if you are taking in enough money to cover the expenses and show a little bit of a profit.
Rent or leasing it. But you don't maybe even know that if they're trying to give you a loan. You don't even have maybe... Unless there was a renter pre-existing.
You should know that. Usually the bank will acquire that before you can buy it.
Require you to have your...
To have a proof of...
How you're going to spell it out, how you're going to do this.
Usually.
Assuming that you can do it.
Right.
At that
They want a business plan.
Yeah, right. Gotcha.
They want a cash flow.
If you're like just starting out, it's your first house... Memory serves, if you're under the 20%, you can sometimes still get it, but then you're paying private mortgage interest, right, or insurance.
Insurance, they call it, yeah.
Yeah, insurance.
Yeah, you're right.
On top of what you're already paying until you hit that 20% equity point.
Yeah, that is a possibility. Yeah.
So it costs, so you can get in, but it costs even more.
Yeah, you're paying that extra interest until you got that $20,000 paid, which you're paying interest first, too.
Right.
So it's $20,000 on the principal part of it, which is, you know, in the beginning is very small.
Oh, is that what the principal and interest, and then you know, what did they call it?
Principal and interest would be normally part of your mortgage,
yeah.
But then it's insurance on top of it, which is like an extra payment you're making.
Yeah, they call it mortgage insurance, but really what it is you're paying a high risk loan and a low risk loan.
That's
so
right.
They'll charge you 5% on that $20,000 that you didn't have to put down on the house until you got that $20,000 marker.
And so the bank's just requiring it to cover themselves.
They're making more money on you.
Yeah, well, and they're going to be safer.
But you're taking a higher risk.
But they'll be safer if you screw up.
Yeah.
Because this insurance company will step in and say.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe. I don't even know. I don't even really know if it's an insurance company. I just think it's a term they use to make it sound better than we're going to charge you double interest.
So, whatever happened to other people's money, okay, that was what you'd hear again and again and how you're becoming rich or owning property because other people were paying for it. And I think it is a little bit how we're discussing this at the moment is that if I've got my ducks in a row and I find the right tenants to rent from me, they're paying to pay off my loan. They're paying for me to go another 10 years on loan payments and property taxes and insurance and all these other things that if I were smart, I'll have figured into their rent payments. And that's probably the business plan that you're saying the bank wants to give you the loan.
That's part of the cash flow, but that's true of any business, isn't it? It's other people's money that you're after.
If
you're reliant on your own money, you're not going to get anywhere.
Right. But you're not... yes, and I guess this business is you taking the risk, providing a place, and then doing the maintenance and answering the calls at night or whatever else that come up.
Right.
That is definitely a business at that point.
Just a different way to look at it.
What's that?
Just a little different angle.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
It is. But that was the big sell. You can grow rich on other people's monies, and Dave Ramsey learned a hard lesson in regard to that. Dave Ramsey became known only because of his great failure of having gotten so many properties and then being foreclosed upon by the banks. And it just wiped them out. And he started rethinking life and his purpose. From what I remember, at a cardboard table in his living room with his wife pacing. And then he became very much a debt-free oriented, don't take out loans type of person. And I appreciate a lot Dave Ramsey's philosophy because I think it's safe and I tend to be a chicken in some ways. So, I'll read this real quick. I have an unusual way of looking at the world. My wife Sharon says I'm weird, and truthfully, I am weird. But there's a reason. Starting from nothing, by the time I was 26, I had a net worth of a little over $1 million. I was making $250,000 a year. That's more than $20,000 a month net taxable income. I was really having fun, but 98% truth is a lie. That 2% can cause big problems, especially with $4 million in real estate. I had a lot of debt, a lot of short-term debt, and I'm the idiot who signed up for the trip. The short version of the story is that debt caused us, over the course of 2.5 years of fighting it, to lose everything. We didn't tell anyone what was going on, but if we had to do it again, we would learn from the wisdom of others who have been through it. We soon learned that we were not the only ones at the bottom. Barbie and Ken, you know the couple who appear to be perfect clothes, perfect car, perfect house, are broke. And I don't take financial advice from broke people anymore. he definitely has brought out, if you ever listen to his radio show or whatever, people who look like they got it all together, they're just moving, shaking, going out when they want to go out, doing this and doing that, having a beautiful house and this... But they're just living day by day on making their payments.
Yeah.
And the minute they hit rough waters, they're toast. And it all gets exposed at that point, which is kind of like what happened to him. But I can't imagine anymore having a life with a house payment, which I get it. And even Ramsey gets it, that there's a place for a mortgage, you know. He's not telling people to get rid of their mortgage. He's just telling them, pay down and get rid of the mortgage. But then having credit card debt and owning one or two cars that you owe on and all these things, I can't fathom that world. I would want no part of that. And we've always been kind of, I think, frugal that way, that we didn't get into huge, huge tens and thousands of dollars of debt beyond our our own mortgage. And then I kind of feel like people are taught to make decisions that way. They are, even when you watch TV shows that, you know, are fixed house fixer-upping shows and stuff, it's always like they come in and what can you afford is the question. In other words, what that means is what kind of debt payment can you afford to pay monthly? Where's your income? Can you pay in debt $2,000 a month? I mean, they start making their decisions that way, and I think that is so ridiculous to me. Never. Just don't get it then. Just hold off.
It's a lot of way how kids are taught today, though.
I know, I agree.
Okay, you make this much, can we make the payments?
You can afford this then.
That's why every store you walk into, if you're buying a TV, well, the payment, whatever the payments, they don't even ask how much the thing cost. You know, what's the payment?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I'll take that 56-incher because I can make the payments, you know.
Which is an absolute, I think it's an absolute unbiblical way to approach life and finances.
Yeah.
And it is a slave mentality that the debtor, the slave, the verse I just quoted.
But the businesses,
you're a slave to the lender.
Businesses are picking up on this and saying, okay, this is how we got to sell these things.
Oh, they're all, as long as they get the money, they're okay.
We got to make sales somehow.
Yeah.
I remember sitting across from a car dealership with a guy once, and he started doing the, like, your payment thing, and I was like, okay, but how much is it going to cost me total? And I, like, couldn't get him to say it.
Yeah.
I'm like, do I have to pull my own calculator out?
Yeah.
I don't care what the payment is. I want to know how much I pay by the end of the thing.
How much is it to boot?
It's crazy.
A lot of people don't even know what that statement is.
What did you just say?
How much to boot? Which is...
I don't know what I'm saying.
Okay, so if I'm buying a car and I'm trading one in, what's the difference? What am I paying?
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's what we always... To boot is what we always called it. Okay. Maybe that's a Dutch term. I don't know.
Do you know the origin of the word, to boot? I mean, or
no.
What that phrase is, yeah.
No, it could be...
one of those things.
Could be a fire thing, as far as I know.
Yeah. That's... So I think he's got good advice. I am all for that way of thinking. Anything we've done, I think, in life, it didn't necessarily wasn't be based on Dave Ramsey, because we just learned of him probably when we moved down here and started like paying attention to what he was teaching on getting out of debt and so on. And it wasn't because we were in great debt, but he also teaches on investing and for the future and thinking about the inheritance you're going to be leaving or not leaving, your own descendants. Oh, can't go there yet. I tried to rewatch that last night real quick, and Tracy put up with it. But so you want to buy real estate other than your home. What do you hope to do with it? Do you plan to fix it up and sell it? Some people go down that path. Okay. There are reality shows and all of these different types of things. Flip or flop, fixer up for house hunters, love it or list it. I'm a fan of watching shows dealing with businesses and business ideas. I always enjoy that. I tried to get a local diner to just, hey, watch some Gordon Ramsay stuff. He's got great advice for these little restaurants he's trying to turn around. No interest. It's like, why wouldn't you take just and learn from it? You can even enjoy yourself sitting in front of the TV at leisure, but you can be learning some of these principles or whatever. No interest.
Actually, I was at a restaurant that they did watch that show, and that's because they brought my meal out. And I said something to the effect of how it was cooked. I'm not one to complain, usually.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was, like, really raw.
Okay.
And she says, we will not put up with that, she says. And she took it back and brought me out a new one and didn't charge me whatever.
Yeah.
And then she sat by us later on and we were talking. She goes, yep, I actually watched that show, she says, and I take his advice, she says.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We don't have a bad meal that goes out. If we do, we totally comp it. She says,
yeah, comp it because we want you back again and having a good experience and getting a good free meal when it was all said and done.
Right.
Yeah. No, I think you're a fool if you don't take advantage of some of these things that we have easy access to, that can be enjoyable. It's not like hard work watching Kitchen Nightmares.
Yeah, right.
It's kind of fun,
yeah.
You know. So why wouldn't you do that? You'll always glean something, is how I feel, when you just invest time in a book or a TV show or whatever the case.
Especially somebody that's known for that business.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, he's a chef, you know.
World-renowned chef. I mean, he's got to know something if he owns all them restaurants.
Be leery of that whole attitude of how much you can afford, which we just talked about a second ago, that credit game mindset. Banks and realtors tend to like that game because, hey, how much can you afford means I'm going to show you different houses that I know you could afford, right? Well, pretty soon you're affording the Taj Mahal, but you can only make payments for 7 months until the economy hits you harder. now the Taj Mahal is owned by the bank trying to get rid of it to some other person.
All of a sudden you're Ken and Barbie.
Yeah, yeah. You look like Ken and Barbie for 7 months. do you plan to buy it as an investment to sell or to use in the future? It's a question to ask. I skipped one. Do you plan to rent your building or apartment or land to someone? Do you plan to buy it as an investment to sell or use in the future? I always don't think in those buy it to invest in selling the future. If you're not making the income, it's like you kind of got to feel like you got to take care of this place until then. It's like I got to re-roof it probably before, you know, that big day comes and all of these different expenses. I tend to be, when I think about some of that stuff, I think lazy. I think I'm not going to do it. I don't want to do it. I'm going to pay somebody to do it, you know, which is part of my formula always. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to be the guy who's helping change out the furnace to save $1,000. I'm going to say, have at it. How much more is it going to cost me? Okay. That's me. Because I'll work hard, but it's going to be in the things I like doing and I feel like I excel at. It's not going to be in things that I think forever have said, the car mechanic can be the car mechanic. He can change my oil. He can do all that stuff that every man can do. I'm going to go sell locks, or I'm going to go do this. Because I think in the time spent, not that that's the only consideration, but in the time spent, I'm going to make a lot more money to pay him and be ahead of the game than if I were to start changing my own oil.
Depends on the situation, I guess. So I helped him for 5 hours and saved me $1,000. So I got paid $200 an hour.
Right.
I can't do anything else for that.
Yep. And that there's a good formula for your scenario there. And if you've got the wherewithal to do it, right? So, I'm not saying that was a... And
just
I'm not saying changing your own oil is a bad thing either, because you know how to do something. And manual labor itself is a good thing just before God and in your own thoughts. So I hated the idea, but I got the sprayer from Calvin's house. He had the siding sprayer. And I thought, okay, I'm going to spray at least the greenery on the white siding of the parsonage. And as far as I could, it's the main stuff. I wasn't going to go all the way around. I can't get up to some places. But I've done this years back, and I thought, okay, I'm going to do it. Alto Fair's coming up. I got to make it look a little more presentable. And I thought, I hate this idea. If someone would just come and do it for me, who would I even ask? I'm going to do it. So I got the sprayer from Calvin's, and I remember it's pretty easy once you spend any time looking at, you know, hooking it up and get up. And I just plugged in, hosed up, and started and added the detergent into the water area, started spraying. And it feels good when you're doing something, you know, that is manually laborish. It wasn't that hard. Climbing the ladder, coming down, moving the stuff, spraying. And then later last night, it was like, I don't know, who touched my arm? I said, oh, that was my spraying arm, careful. It's a little wimpy wand. But anyway, so I did what I wanted to do. It felt good. Could I have made more money doing something else? I'm sure of it. But in any rate.
Well, I think that's part of it, though, too, is the satisfaction of looking back and having an accomplishment as well.
Yes.
I mean, that plays into it.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. And it's not all about dollars and cents, obviously. If it were all about dollars and cents, Jesus wouldn't have died on the cross, right? And Abraham wouldn't have left the Ur of the Chaldeans and gone off. But for both of them, they own everything. I mean, it's amazing. So those are questions. Yeah, interesting angle, and that's where this movie comes in. Was with Ray Kroc, right? McDonald's restaurants. And this is kind of a long story. Anyone see this movie? Okay. As I remember it, and I couldn't get to that part, but the greatest moneymaker for Kroc was the fact that he bought the land that the buildings would be put on. And so every McDonald's had to pay him rent, in a sense. They were running the franchise. It started as two other brothers' business. They were named McDonald's. But he owned the land that they put the franchise business on, and they had to pay him. And with all the McDonald's that are out there and all the land purchases on the corners of the freeway there, as you head into the little towns, that's where he made his money. And it wasn't even like he had to be extra invested in the business, McDonald's business itself anymore. So
either him or he got people, other people to buy, and then he'd take a percentage.
Of the franchise.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely got these other people involved. And he found out that the best people to own a franchise were the young couples who were hungry.
Yeah.
to make money, to earn a living and to do things right. It wasn't the...
That didn't know
he started, it wasn't the golf club people with all the money that could throw it around, because they weren't invested.
And he was actually going to lose money with those people.
Yes.
Because
yes.
They knew better. So they were going to actually take some of his pie.
Oh,
if he got
yeah, and I don't remember
if they
that.
Got him involved.
Didn't see that as much.
I found it to be kind of a sad movie, because
yeah.
the actual brothers that built the business
yes.
got ripped off.
Yes.
And he made money doing basically yeah. nothing.
Yes, I'm not holding him up as a business ethics example as much as I am as this is what he did
yeah.
with real estate,
yeah.
and it was significant, and it's well worth watching the movie just because it gets your thoughts turning on business in general. Loan payment, next page. Loan payment, property tax, maintenance. Oh, sorry. I'm skipping. No, sorry. I'm skipping the most important part. All right. I want to buy real estate, okay, and I want to rent to someone. This is what you're thinking now. And how will you pay for it? That's going to be a huge, huge, important decision to make. Sometimes it is a 20% down and a bank lien against the property, right? You're going to maybe go that route if you're going to take a loan out, which I, again, question whether you want to do that wholeheartedly. And if you do, I've got certain things that we decided in our heads that we tried to do that I'll share in a little bit. But you and the bank are in it together, and it's hard to get around that, or you and mom and dad, or you and whoever you're getting a loan from. And if moths fly out of your pants pocket, then the bank will do something with its side of the partnership. I'll guarantee you that you won't end up with that property. You start losing it. Is there a formula then, if you're looking at a rental opportunity before you even buy the house, is there a formula that you should consider? There is in the book, that book, I think, is this the one that I had bought a bunch of copies? Okay. I think Masterson spends about a chapter or two on just this whole idea of the ingredients that you've got to consider if you're going to take out a loan to buy a place and rent it out. I'm not going to get into those things. But I know that Paul's wrestled with these thoughts, and Zach has wrestled with these thoughts a little bit, and Calvin too, with Zach, I think. What do we need to make sure that this property can do financially?
And this is where cash flow comes in.
To determine whether I can buy it or not. Yeah, go ahead. Why don't you start, Paul, and then...
Well, the basic rule, the easiest formula to get you started, to see if it's even worth going in, is usually you take rent. So let's say I have a duplex that I'm buying, and they're getting $700 a side. So the rent in is $1,400. that place should cash flow at 140.
Say that again. Sorry, slower.
So if the rent coming in is 1400, that place should cash flow at 140. If the rent is 1200,
oh, you mean you should profit at 140
yeah,
per month?
Yeah, you should be able to have a cash extra? Flow if you okay. pay 140 for the place.
Okay.
Or if you get 1200, you should be able to afford 120.
So 10% of what you're getting as income, you're saying you should be able to have in your pocket when all is said and done.
You should be able to cash flow. That means you should be able to cover insurance, property tax, and mortgage interest.
What about maintenance?
And maintenance. Yeah.
Maintenance
is in that too? It is. This is a very simple formula for, let's say you're looking at a place. And you're wondering if it's even worth investigating. This would be your first formula.
Just so I understand, the rent that they pay should be at roughly 10% of your purchase price of the house.
Yeah.
You don't pay $150,000 for a house if you're doing like $1,000 a month. You want $1,500 a month to be able to buy $150,000 house.
Okay, I see. So you're saying that the total cost of the house, $150,000, you need to make sure that a basic rule would be you need to get $1,500 a month from your tenant.
Correct.
10% of the overall cost of the house for 1 year, per month.
Yeah, so you have to take into account that you better be familiar with the area and say, okay, is $700 really a good number for this place? Or if this guy is saying he's getting $700 aside, but really, the highest rent in town is $800, and this place isn't near that. Well, I'm not going to get that $700. So, the roof needs to be replaced at $20,000. So now that's got to come off of that too. So if I'm getting $1,400, the place is at $140, but I need to put $20,000 roof on
right before you even get anywhere.
Before
right.
I even get started.
Now you're $160,000.
Right.
Which means $1,600.
Yeah. So this is kind of a very vague tool, per se, to start in negotiations. Okay, I'm looking at a place. He says he's getting $700. I believe that he is, aside. He wants $140,000.
Per side, you've got two units.
You got two units or whatever. So you're getting $1,400. He's got the place at $140. It will cash flow, but I see the roof isn't good. So maybe I'll come back and say maybe $120,000.
Okay.
I'll take that off.
Because you're going to say, okay, I'd buy the place from you, but that roof's got to be done.
That roof is done. Or the water heaters are bad, or the furnace is, sketchy or whatever. Now, if they were
still paying $700 a month, you could still keep charging the $1,400 because they just got a new roof. You're not going to make their payments less.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you might even raise it or whatever, but it's if you're looking at the place, this is a good place to start.
Yeah.
And go from there.
So are you, you have two rentals right now?
Yeah.
Okay. And you just bought that second one, which you had to put in all the extra time and money.
Right.
In the last year or so, right?
I think it's been 2 years now.
Okay. All right. And they had tenants on both sides when you bought that one?
No, one side was empty. But I knew what rent is in town, having my other rental, and I knew like the complexes were charging $150 more
per unit. Okay.
For the 2-bedroom. How many bedrooms makes a difference as well? Of course, you can get more rent for a 2-bedroom than you can a 1-bedroom or a 3-bedroom.
What about the neighborhood?
Neighborhood's important too, I think.
It would be for me if I were in Norway.
Because nobody wants to rent from you, even if your place is golden and the guy next door.
It's got three cars parked on the lawn.
Yeah.
And
it's got two Harleys and one's tore apart and the other one isn't,
In fact, you guys, I think, would know, in this case maybe. Who was living right down near the prison for a while on the. Was you?
Yeah,
that was kind of getting old for you.
Oh, yeah.
You wanted to get away from there, I remember. You walked into a nice scenario, but I cannot. There's some places I just wouldn't want to live. I wouldn't want those kind of neighbors necessarily. Not to
Well, and the trouble is that if you have a rundown neighborhood, you're going to attract people that are okay living there.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if that's their thing, that's their thing, but they're usually not going to be as caring either.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if they live in a dumpy neighborhood, they're not going to look at your, and they want to rent your place, they're going to turn your place into a dump too, usually, but not always. But
and so when a neighborhood starts to take care of things, you know, another house gets sold and this one's taken care of,
right,
and it's improved upon, I mean, there's hope there then.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Turn this around. I bought low, but things are getting better.
But then going back to cash flow, there's other formulas that you can use then as you're getting closer to buying,
okay,
you know, before you pull the trigger. And there's websites galore.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get as detailed as being basically if you want to take out, you have to take out mortgage and then your insurance and your property tax, and then you have to figure repair and maintenance. And you can get as detailed as saying, okay, 5% for rent loss. You know, if it's empty, then I have that figured in, that I can be empty a couple months and still make cash flow. In Waupun, I add 5% for unpaid utilities, because if you don't pay your utilities in Waupun, it goes to the landlord.
Okay, so even though they were responsible to pay the utilities, they jump ship.
If they jump ship and you can't squeeze the blood out of turnip,
yeah,
you end up with it on your tax roll, nothing else. So,
Zach, I'm going to have you chime in a little bit from some of the things you guys studied.
Sure.
And let me just pull up this one.
So, just to start, I've got, I've not done anything myself yet, but I do have a couple people I know who have dozens of rental properties in the last few years. And so I just picked their brain, like, you know, what do you guys use when you're considering it, that kind of thing. One of the things the guy said that it was really helpful just to get an idea around, you know, what the local people are charging or getting for rent is going to, and I'm not sure if you're on, can you click on the 2022, that link right underneath year?
Under where?
Underneath year. See that? Fiscal year 2022.
Okay.
Is that a link? I can't talk from here. Okay.
No.
Okay. Anyway, if you go to the HUD website, you can search for fair market rent. It's like a housing and urban development basically will give you a county by county breakdown, and you can see what a one bedroom, two bedroom, and three bedroom is going for, and then it gives you a ballpark. Maybe not exactly. It's not going to go down to the like the township level, but it gives you what are people paying Fond du Lac County for a one-bedroom rental
at the county level. Dodge part. County, Fond du Lac.
Yep.
So not, when you that's not bad for a person that has had one for a while.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, keep it tight. What is it this year?
Yeah.
Or whatever.
You know, just way low.
Gives you a starting point because you can't really do your math unless you know what you're going to get for a property.
Correct.
So that was like kind of step one, and then step two. Then is you can get a calculator, and there's a bunch of them, but if you can go to your second image there. So, like, you just go to rental property calculator, calculator.net, and you can put every single number in here. So you can put how much you're paying for it, what your down payment percentage is, what your interest rate is, how long the loan is, what your closing costs are in buying the property, does it need repairs immediately, yes or no. Then you keep going down, what's your property tax, what's your insurance. Do you have any fees? What's your expected annual maintenance on the thing? Any other costs you haven't accounted for? Then you put in what's your monthly rent that you're going to get for it? Are you going to have a vacancy rate? Is there going to be some amount of time every year where you're not filling the unit because you're trading them over? Is there going to be a management fee? Are you going to pay someone to take that call at midnight if you don't
yes.
want to take that
call
at midnight?
Yes. No, that one I'd be figuring something in.
You know, and then also you can, because it also is eventually presumably becoming an asset for you could sell in the future. It'll ask you how long you're going to keep the property for. Are you going to sell it? The whole goal of the whole thing is you're trying to get your ROI, your return on investment for the property. Because as my friend made a good point, he said, listen, it doesn't take you any time to invest in your 401k or the stock market or whatever. If you could get 8% doing that, why would you go through all this hassle to get 5%?
Right.
He said the reason he and his buddy were doing this is they were targeting 20%. They wanted 20% annual return on their investment.
And if they couldn't, then they just didn't make the purchase.
Right. So if you do this, like I've done this, taken this calculator and looked at the rates and stuff, and like in Waupun, there's not a lot of places in Waupun where you can get 20%.
Right.
There just isn't. You're not.
So, you didn't, and we didn't spend the time on the one that you did.
Yeah,
John Carson.
Yeah.
Where would that have left you?
That would have been close to the right number.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Because it was an affordable place. It had two units. They were both two-bedroom units. So I think the rates we were looking. Do you remember, Calvin? I thought it was like, was it like 700 or 800 a unit we could have gotten probably. One person was two people in there already. Didn't need a lot of fixing up. We could have basically just done some paint and maybe carpet and, like, gotten people almost right away. There was a little bit of window work that needed to
be done. So when you were doing that, did you start, when you're walking through and you're doing the math, did you start to feel almost like a slumlord?
this is the joke that my friends have, is we tease them about being slumlords.
Oh,
because
no.
They buy cheap properties, they fix them up a little bit, and they rent them out.
Yeah, which obviously that wouldn't be ethically proper to be. Slumlord.
Not with the moral connotations that term usually has. But
Right. No, that's funny. No, and we didn't really get to that as a family analyzing. Oh, hey, speaking of family. Oh, she's quick to go. No, get rid of that. That's my screen
saver. So anyway, I think if you're getting serious at all about this kind of way of thinking, that's very sobering to fill out a calculator like that.
Yeah,
good.
And
I like your comment.
You don't necessarily think about.
I like your comment about these guys figured, well, you don't do nothing and you can maybe make 8% on your 401, which has been the case the last year and a half or whatever. But
over the history of the market.
But if you're gonna try beating 8% at least, right?
Yeah.
All the work involved in owning a property, you might as well.
And then you have to look at markets go up and down, and rental is more or less a long term thing unless you're flipping them. You know, your probability, because like we talked about with your interest, your probability is until after you get past that hump and you're starting to pay principal.
Yeah, past that. What do they call it? Tipping point.
Right? And the guys that I knew or know that do this kind of thing too, they're trying to do it at scale. So that also involves they've got like contractor type employees who are taking calls. One's got a family member who is basically almost full-time employed just fixing up the places that they buy and going from one to the next.
So you have to have quite a few units in order to get
to
that point.
Yes.
Yeah,
because when we owned Still Up North in New Auburn, and we thought, okay, well, maybe we'll rent it out, keep it, maybe we'll go back and retire up there or whatever. We loved it up there. But it's just like, they're having a problem with this. Or how do you deal with that? You know, these are tenants. You've got to be, I think, you're nuts if you're not just locally doing it, where it's very easy to get your hands on. Otherwise, you got to have somebody like set aside as a employee or part-time subcontractor or something.
And if you have a full-time employee, now you're talking FICA and all that.
Yeah.
And if you can do it yourself, be surprised how much you're saving.
And if your kids are asked to do it... You know, they got to have time and desire as well, and that's, you know, throwing that burden on them. So, because I think everything we've done, hopefully, is with the idea that this isn't ours. We're stewards of Christ, and we'd want our children to be able to continue carrying this stuff on, which we'll get into that more on the last meeting. But... So did you get the name of that calculator.net or whatever? I think that's probably it.
There's a lot of them out there, and it's a great tool to use. And I think, too, you can always call your bank to find out what the fees are, because a lot of times you'll be surprised on how much that is. So the next step that I did is I went ahead and paid an appraiser to look at the place and make sure that it was worth what I thought it was worth. And what's that?
Do you do inspection?
I don't do an inspection because I figure I kind of do my own as far as, you know, I look at the basement and the foundation all the way up to the attic and the shingles and all that kind of stuff. I kind of have that knowledge, so I'm lucky that way. But the appraisal is something that he'll actually take other houses in the area and can do a comparison. Mm-hmm. And with that, if you have a good assessor, they'll even add what the rent is for these type of houses that he's comparing to the one that you're buying, as far as, you know. So then you know, if you don't already, you now know what rent is. Is that $700 a unit? Is that something that's going to fly, or is that just way out of the world or whatever? So, and usually they'll do that. However, I did that on my own because I thought that was worth the $650 so that I know before I go any further and start spending money on closing costs and all that kind of stuff. So, but the bank will have another appraise done that you'll have to pay for. So I paid for somebody else too. And
somebody you kind of know? Give you a deal?
The one that I did first, I know the guy.
Yes.
But the second one, actually, nowadays the bank doesn't even know who it is.
Yeah.
So they do an appraisal, it gets sent out there to three different people, and one of them will get it. So there's no favoritism on the bank side.
Yeah.
So
I find that, and I don't know that I mentioned this, but I've been grateful just to know certain people that they just are the guys I would go to. I mean, John Hurston as a real estate guy, I'm just going to go to him.
Yeah.
I like how he has a desire for me, you know, in the sense of helping me, not just from a realtor standpoint, where they're all going to help you, you know, but
yeah, right.
From that standpoint, but also just as another Christian, you know, as another person who's trying to do things for the kingdom of God and likes your family and this and that. So I think it's a no-brainer. I'm always going to use him.
Well, and if he sees that, and he sees that you're a person that's going to be a futuristic customer.
Thinker, too, yeah.
You know, he's going to look out for your best interest. That's how he gets repeat business.
As well, yes. Yeah.
It should be.
I think.
And I think you can tell that.
It's like a win-win. We're investing in the future together, in a sense. Next page, 15. I mentioned some of the things here. Loan payment, property tax, maintenance of the place, unpaid utility issues, improvements. All of these force you to establish a rental income that will pay for those, for them, okay? Then the question, though, is, and you talked about the cash flow idea to be able to pay for all of these things, Paul. But don't you expect a profit even monthly, in a sense?
Yeah, I think I do. I want a cash flow per year. Now, the other part of that is now tax deduction. So if I want to do improvements on the place, let's say, that might take my profitability out.
Yeah,
however, it will save me on my income tax. It will also increase the value of my property. Mm-hmm. So now you got to play that little game a little bit with it, too.
Yeah, yeah. Why and are you shaking your head?
If I can...
To think about right now?
No, I just... I have a couple of friends who are in the rental business who are playing that game, too. And I don't mean playing it in, a negative sense, but, okay, our investments on our rental properties this year are really high. We're going to put in a new this or that because we need it anyways, and then it'll save me on my taxes because where my income is too high comparatively this year. And I'm just like,
depends on bracket then at that point, because if your tax bracket is in the next level and you can get that below that and you can increase the value of the place and or increase your rent because the place is more of a rentable place. Mm-hmm. If it's a better looking, more appealing to a higher rental level, you know, that investment comes back again too.
Do you use an accountant?
No. Oh, well, to do my taxes I do, yeah. But not to run the place.
I would never dream of not having an accountant. Once we started the business, that was just become a no-brainer. Even with the church and the way I was set up at first, it was set up as like, I'm going to be a tax-free preacher, okay? So whatever tax I can get out of because I'm clergy, I don't want the government to take it. So whatever you need to do to make that right, and they understand that. Mm-hmm. And it's legitimate. And I wasn't going to try to figure that out. But then you add business to it, and then you add, like, these properties and the income that starts, and it's like, just figure it out for me.
Yeah.
And then even that way, though, the accountants don't always get it right. It costs you when they don't. So
to answer your question, yeah, I do have an accountant, and I do a pre-end of the year to see where I'm at and what makes the most sense.
Yeah, we do too. Yeah. Let's talk in November before we get close to having them really make sense.
And then if I need a new stove, I'll get a new stove right over.
Then you make those decisions at the end of the year.
Yeah, I also make them through the year. But now, okay, so one decision's been made for me already, and that's replace the furnace at the air conditioning unit. So I'm thinking I'm looking pretty good right now.
Some are more discretionary than others.
Yes.
The other thing, I remember Dave Ramsey again saying something like he just thinks it's foolhardy to go and spend a bunch of your profitability for tax purposes.
Yeah.
And why would you do that? Just take your tax hit and do it. But I do think when one puts you into a whole different tax bracket, now maybe you start making those little decisions to keep from that being the case. But that's my opinion. And it doesn't mean we don't try to like buy another van for technicians at the end of the year because it's going to make some sense. And we need one anyhow, or we're going to within the next year and a half. So,
well, that was one kind of funny thing we encountered where the accountants would kind of talk about, okay, well, end of the year, like what things, like they almost talk a little bit sometimes as if like you're just going to spend the money because you like lose it, but no, you're not losing the money. You're losing a portion of the money versus you're spending the entire dollar. You're only losing a portion of the dollar to the tax man.
And I think that's Ramsey's point.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You're
going to
just spend money when you don't have to spend it?
So you buy the van you need, but not an extra van just because.
Right. Right. No, that's good. So we started out, right? And it was one commitment at a time, which I kind of felt was Ramsey kosher. Because we didn't own a house. We live in the parsonage. And we thought we had some money, and we started this business, and we could buy a property. Let's buy a property that we'll consider it our mortgage, right? And we'll make payments and do whatever. And so we bought 317 East Main Street, which is a big, beautiful building, and the Lord blessed us with it because we had heard from your wife that, oh, man, and I was talking to Sue, and she goes, yeah, I can't believe they're selling that building so cheap because they had a coffee shop, Jane's Java and Junk, in there at one point. And then they moved up. They quit doing it because I think parents were sick or something. They were taking care of parents. And so where Sue was working, they got, like, all their old coffee supply things and so on. And I can't believe they're selling it so cheap. I go, really? They're selling that building? So I said, John, Karsten, right, get us in there. Let us walk through there. It wasn't listed. I said, how do we get in there to see this building? I understand that they want to sell the building. He goes, oh, I don't typically like to call on people who don't, you know, call on us to ask if they want to sell. But he did. And they took us through, and they had what I thought your wife said they were asking for it. We offered them whatever. It was like $60,000 or something. And they accepted it. We got the building, and we really wanted the building because our competitors were starting to influence the specifications of new construction jobs. So it's part of the spec read, you must have a commercial site building. Well, we didn't have a commercial site building. I was working out of the parsonage office, and we had locks and things, as I said, in the past, in the garage. And okay, I said, no, this is tricky. We'll get ourselves a commercial site building. This isn't too hard. So all of this played together, and we bought this, got a great blessed deal. It's a beautiful building, and we don't own it anymore, but we sold it. And I told John, you know, I think we should be able to sell it. Well, I don't know. The building's down here. They sell pretty cheap. I said, but this is not just like any building down here on Main Street. This is a beautiful building. And I said, let's hold out. I think the right person will come along. Well, then Katrina of Katrina's Case Boutique came along, and she goes, I don't know if you remember me, but I came in here one time. What was the story, Tracy, on that?
Wanting to know if we wanted to rent. Interested in renting to her. yeah. part of the building or whatever. So
because she loved the building. Yeah. yeah. And I thought, okay, yeah, and I don't remember that. But so she paid the full amount that we were looking to get. I don't remember, but it was more than $60,000. And she loves it. She's happy there. We're happy to take that sale, make some money with it, pay for it, something else. And so what we did, and this is another beauty of John, is I know, because we're looking. Okay, now we've also got no home. Maybe we should buy something. We'd be interested in the parsonage, okay, but not going to float that boat out there too far because it's a parsonage. Not everybody's on board with selling the parsonage. What does that look like then? So let's start thinking about where we would go if we were to have to leave here, or, okay, the next mortgage thing. And so we bought this place on Edgewood Drive, and this is a recent picture, and those bushes out front with the metal around them is Lydia's wildflower garden or something, I don't know. But that's where she and Ashley are now living, and Naomi lived there with them for a while. But we just rented to them. We bought the house, got a great deal on that one. I know a place that they're, it's not, you guys on hard times or whatever, and he's looking to get up. And it's in a nice neighborhood, and it's like the worst house in the nice neighborhood, which is just where you want to be. And so we got the house, we did some things to it, and we got to probably redo the roof at some point soon, sounds like. But it was a great blessing, and it's paid off. Okay, so we get the payments from them, we stock money toward it, and so on. But it's paid off completely, and it's been that way for some years. We still get rent payments, pretty reasonable rent payments. Well, that's okay.
Your cash flow is good if you paid it outright.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, this one only cost us like $80,000.
It was a good deal.
It was a great deal. We had to recarpet and paint and all that kind of stuff, but it was not real problematic. So God blessed us with this as well, I felt. So the bank building, it was very difficult. Did you work when we had the bank building with us, Matt?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know how long you worked when we were there.
Almost 6 years.
Okay. And it was getting cramped. I mean, we've grown as a company, and you get a lot of orders in, and they start piling up next to the teller booths,
And you got to load it into your van through a narrow hallway.
And you go, yeah, there are a lot. That's a little challenges. But we thought, okay, we got to find something different. Maybe now's the time. We got a little money. From the sale of that 317, I think it was still. And my history recollection isn't quite the same. What about that place? There's a building. It's side by side. There's a tenant on the left, which is the USDA, which is really the kind of tenant you want, which we found out after the fact. And then this other side was free and clear. Let's buy. Can we maybe get? And I said to John, can you find out what's going on with that building? Yeah, I'll look into it.
Does he actually talk to
you? He talks a little like that.
I haven't spoken to him. Yeah. I've seen his step up, but I'm thinking, is it really like that?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. He's very.
I'm sorry. And it's not to mock. I talk, when I think of people, I kind of use their voice. But,
Can you talk to me for a second?
Can you talk to me for a second?
But anyway, so he didn't look into it. And I said, come on, we want to pull the trigger on something here. And so I reached out to him again. Oh, yeah, sorry, And he goes, well, it's a good thing we waited. Okay, come on, John. It's a good thing we waited because they had come down with the price on it again. And so we got this building, I think it was it $210,000 or something? It wasn't that high.
Yes, it was.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
Yes, it was.
It wasn't 290. You think? No, it wasn't 3.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it was.
Yes, it was.
It was probably 290. Something.
No, it was not.
I don't remember that. Anyway, all right. So, but the price was right, whatever it was. And the thing is.
Well, the big thing was finding out.
The tenant.
The tenant. Yeah. I mean, that's what sealed the deal.
So it's a government tenant, and they leased their site from the building owner, which became us, and their lease payment, more than pays for everything. as far as cash flow goes. Yeah. I mean, more pays for everything. So whatever, when we moved in and did some remodeling and had that all done, we can, as Gapa Security Solutions, can also pay towards the mortgage of the building. Okay? And so we paid rent to Gapa Properties. And this building is now paid off completely, which is a great blessing. And
so in purchasing that, we were obligated to take on that lease.
Yes.
That came with the building. We had to...
Respect.
USDA has had long-term leases.
Yes.
So they had a certain year contract on it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, and so now, just so it doesn't all smell like roses, we had to just work to redo the lease. And look at Tracy's face right now. She's just disgusted.
Nightmare.
Yeah.
It is
nightmare.
Painful.
Government program.
It is painful reading stuff written in double negatives and all of this with language you'd never even... You got to look up like two words per sentence.
Somebody makes a living writing those.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's all he does.
And he's called a lawyer. It's just waiting.
And he is making a lot of money doing it. Because
Well, and the thing is we're so, you know, paranoid. That we don't really, we want to kind of understand it, Tracy even more so, that it's like we had to get to a point where we said, listen, the guy who's trying to work with us on this is just trying to get through so we can have this done.
Yeah.
They're not out to get you, you know, as much as you like to think that way of the government. They're not out to get you, you know.
But they're out to get a good deal. So.
But they're out to, but they are out to say, how can we get this done reasonably and so on, and
well, so, see, their old location, I used to snowplow for them.
The USDA?
Yeah.
Okay.
And just doing that was gobs of paperwork.
Oh, yeah.
I just couldn't believe it. I mean, all I'm doing here is plowing your snow.
Yeah. Well,
I'm
and
not
now,
raising your children here.
Yeah.
And that contract
is not adopting. Yeah. Right. But now we have all those headaches. Snowplower, WD Novice is the snowplower. They work with us, and they get free and clear of having to deal with all that stuff. But we just finished and finally got approval for the new lease, which the guy who runs the show over there says, I'm hoping that this is done so I can retire without having to move, right? And we're like, yeah, that sounds like it could work. If it didn't work, we figured we're going to take over that site and do something else in a way.
Yeah, right.
But
a bar in.
What's that?
Put a bar in.
A bar in?
Yeah.
That would be part of it. Yeah. Part of it.
Right from one job to the next.
But Tracy and I, you know, would work on this thing and on the phone, and then we get some questions answered. Then we got, what's the company that Aaron works for again?
WDS.
Wrong site.
Oops.
WDS, a guy to come and kind of do, get his person involved to do a CAD drawing. There's never a CAD drawing for it. And we're trying to do this work, and it's like, these things are getting shoved on. It's like, oh, you didn't have to have this. Well, where was the last time this was done? They didn't have any of that. So they've taken another step into making sure that everything is better and in its place with our lease. But we just officially were notified that it's a done deal. We got the lease. Next day, I get a call on the phone. Tracy gets an email from this guy looking to buy the property. Don't know if you're interested, but if you're interested in selling the property, we could, you know, talk about it. Because he sees that this is this huge lease that was just established with the government for 12 years.
Yeah.
And it's just a pretty penny to
interesting.
Keep stocking away.
How many hours do you think between you and Mom you guys spent just on that contract, just for perspective?
We don't want to count.
Yeah.
We don't want to count.
Well, she went through and read it all first.
I read over 12 years.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you spent 100
It was like 20 minutes a month. No big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
She's wishing the curse upon you guys for the next one is what she's doing. If it happens again, and it may maybe, and it could come to a point where we need the building space more than we need the tenant, or
rent out your half and to somebody else and have a different building.
Yeah, or that right. And those are all I think decisions you make along the way. But this one was paid for in full, except for part of the lease is going to involve a remodel of their kitchen area next door, which could go up to, with some recarpeting, some other things, which could go up to, according to percentages, $115,000 of work. And that would include any kind of engineering slash architectural, whatever decisions. Okay. But.
And then the red tape is in that too, isn't it?
Well, oh yeah. So the next email we get, we're awarded this lease, and the next email we get, not the phone call of some guy that we don't even know looking to buy it. The next email we get is the guy who's going to be in charge of the project. So you take a short breath and you think, now we've got to start over with whatever red tape this guy's got. But I think the process has taught us one thing, that these guys are just doing their jobs. They're not out to get you. And if you're nice to them, they're nice back. And maybe by the end of the day, you end up in the same place, a little better than you were in the past. Okay, so now we have not the bank building anymore. We got Lydia's place. We call it Lydia's place. It's really all of our place. Right? And we've got that. We own that outright. We bought this. We remodeled it. We're doing work in there. We own this outright, but it, not for long with this remodel work that's going to go on. And then we're thinking, okay, because we own places outright, this is one of these things where I'm still in my mind principally, and Tracy's even harsher on this. Harsher's not that old, right? No. But principally, I'm thinking one mortgage at a time. You know, Dave was okay with a mortgage, right? So I'm going to go with one mortgage at a time. And so we bought this house, which we refer to as Calvin and Callie's house, although it's not technically yet. It is something we purchased. And the other thing, next month, this will be paid off completely. 2 more months. This will be paid off completely. Because we shoved chunks of change at it. And this maybe needs some roof work done too. I don't know where that stands. Otherwise, it's a solid structure, and it happens to be right next to where Lydia's house is. So it worked out perfectly that way.
And that kind of goes back to your slide earlier of the like the second one and the years and the tipping point and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, if you can, like if you're looking at the last one where you're paying $1,074, you can afford that at the, you know, the 3% interest. Now you're knocking that down so much more. And that's kind of essentially what you're talking about here with this house and being able to take cash from other places.
Yep, because now we don't have a 30-year debt.
And that's where you're saving your bulk of your interest because your principal is coming down. You know,
if you make the
payment that way.
The banks don't like it necessarily, but they kind of do like it too because you're stable.
In Wisconsin, there's no prepay law.
Right.
So you can pay ahead as much as you want to.
Yeah.
And that really cuts your interest down phenomenally.
So I have on here one other note about this. So how we started one commitment at a time was our permissible Ramsey mortgage. And then I said, I have also tried to pay down loans within a 7-year period. And I kind of was convicted. I read Deuteronomy 15:1-6. And let me just read that out loud to you, because I think we often neglect the Word of God, right? Or I should say, we neglect the Old Testament a lot of times in our way of thinking. And some things are, in one sense, fulfilled. Some things you still got to wrestle with. And I wrestled with this, right? The sabbatical year. At the end of every 7 years, you shall grant a release. This was in the land of Israel. They weren't going to be indebted beyond 7 years. They had to grant release. If you owed me money, 7th year comes, I don't know. You don't owe me that money anymore if you haven't paid it off.
So a lot of people got beat up on the 6th year.
Yeah. A lot of pressure went into year 6, yeah. And this is the manner of the release. Every creditor shall release what he has lent to his neighbor. He shall not exact it of his neighbor, his brother, because the Lord's release has been proclaimed. Of a foreigner you may exact it, but whatever of yours is with your brother, your hand shall release. But there will be no poor among you, for the Lord will bless you in the land that the Lord your God is giving you for an inheritance to possess. If only you will strictly obey the voice of the Lord your God, being careful to do all this commandment that I command you today. For the Lord your God will bless you as he promised you, and you shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. And you shall rule over many nations, but they shall not rule over you. And we know that didn't all work out that way because of their disobedience. But I kind of felt myself, and I'm still not positive where I stand on the seven-year Sabbath, or the seven-year debt forgiveness, the Jubilee, and how that affects and relates to us. But I thought way back then, I thought, okay, at least I feel like I don't want to carry a loan beyond 7 years if I have anything I can do with that. So even if I set up for a 30-year mortgage or a 15-year mortgage, let's pay this sucker down if we can in 7 years. And I think we've maintained that. I don't know, maybe the 317, the bank building, took a little longer, but...
One of them took... I think that one took longer.
Yeah, that's my goal, just for conscience sake. I feel like if there's something to this yet, I want to do at least my side of it. I know I won't get the bank to forgive it in the seventh year, but if I can keep from being indebted beyond that, that was my goal. And I'm not placing that as any kind of a moral burden on any of you with house mortgages or anything. I'm just saying that was what was going on in my head. But lastly, okay, it's this, the parsonage. All of those other properties aside, this is home, right? This is where we live. I've spent more years living in this place than I've spent anywhere in my life, right? We moved into about 20 years here, right? And more years than anybody's ever lived in that house, I'll guarantee you that. But it's a beautiful house, and yet I don't own it. And I'm okay with that. We own other things. I'd love to own it, but it's not that important. And the thing that matters is, you know, home. That you have a family, that you're living for God and for His kingdom, even when you're in a place that you probably never own. And to me, the parsonage concept is faulty, but it does kind of reinforce a principle that this is all God's, and we're just people passing through, using things, hopefully to His glory. And that's all good then. And if He blesses us with more properties or a bigger business or more children or whatever, just keep your nose down, you know, to Him and keep plodding along and correct your mistakes, you know, or repent of your sins or whatever the case may be. Because it's not ultimately about the money or the size of the house. This is the best house we've ever lived in. Grandest house we've ever lived in. And it's not like the Taj Mahal either, but it's pretty cool. And
it's got character.
Yeah, it is. And it's got some good history and then some remodeled 70s history. So you get a couple generations going on there. But we love it. I love living there. I don't expect that I will move unless we get kicked out or I die or whatever. But it's good for us. And there's nothing to do with real estate on our part. So that should teach some kind of lesson, I think. Do we need to keep moving? We should keep moving. Okay. So rentals, commercial, residential. The question becomes, have I just started a business? Because I'm into so many properties now. And can I just do this with my checkbook still? Or am I creating a little bit more of a business than that? And so we, at some point, decided we should have GAPA properties, and I think it was when we were forming the trust that we decided before that we're going to have two businesses in a sense, GAPA Properties LLC and GAPA Security Solutions, and the trust will own both. And so we'll make decisions for the GAPA properties out of that checkbook and so on, and keep records, and Tracy actually does all the QuickBook works for the GAPA property side of things. And so all the rents from these different entities, from Gappa Security Solutions, from USDA, from Lydia, from Ashley, from Calvin and Callie, they all go to Gappa Properties, and Gappa Properties makes the payments. And after Calvin's place is paid off, then we'll probably go, now what? And only because Dave Ramsey lets me have one mortgage. I mean, that's really how we'll probably think. And it's not because there's any kind of like, I've got to have more. It's just kind of like, this makes sense that, okay, God's given us this. Maybe now is the next purchase. But I'll guarantee you what, and it's going to come up in a little bit. I don't like the idea of renting to people that I don't know. And they're going to come in there and do whatever with the place. Or I'm just going to have people problems then. I don't like that idea at all. And so I don't know where we'll go next. Abby tends to live in the mansion with us for the rest of her life. So I don't know if her husband's going to fit in there, or if there's going to be two men of the house at that point or what. But anyway. So real estate shopping is the next item on their eye. And I know we've kind of talked on and off, and I don't have great knowledge at all here. I listened to the book Building Wealth One House at a Time. That was always highly recommended by Gary North, his John Schaub, and is being like one of the guys you should read and understand. So I encourage you to buy that book, but also I'm not big on start a business, buying houses, like Zach's friends with the however many houses. I'm thinking, I don't want the Dave Ramsey thing. I'm a chicken that way. Just one bite at a time. Let's just take one bite at a time, and over the course of decades, maybe you get somewhere. But neighborhood, buy the worst house in the nice neighborhood. I knew that was one of those things. I don't want to buy the worst house in a junky neighborhood. I don't want to own properties in a junky neighborhood. Sometimes it's not easy to tell which what, but you know the nice neighborhoods. Edgewood drives a nice neighborhood. I mean, we probably have the worst house on that block, and it's not a bad house with Lydia's. Yours might be the second worst house. But they're both nice houses, but they probably need a little, facelift and some new roofs at some point. And we, thanks to, what's his name? Jeff Daney, right? He's the city public works guy or whatever. Great guy. Goes to church down here, I think. But he, after we kind of like had water in the basement a couple of times, it was like ponding up in Lydia's backyard. And
ice skating rink.
Always water. And then I heard, well, you don't have, these are the old road systems. There's no sewer lines or whatever, right?
Storm,
that's it now. So I kind of went in there and said, what can we do? He goes, well, it's not even slated for, until maybe in 2023 or whatever he said. I said, well, but I can't have this going on every time it rains for any kind of period of time. It's just like a pool that gathers. And her house wasn't even as bad as the one further east. They really had the pond years with it. And so I asked them again, then I chimed in. Then I sent them a video once when water was coming from the house, being shoved out by the sump pump, but you could see it bubbling up in the sidewalk. And so I videotaped it and sent it to them. See? I don't know what to do, man. Well, it's already been done. I mean, he pulled that thing together and made it like one of his more important projects, which is part of just talking to your own city officials and stuff. Now they're actually redoing the surface of the street this week or this past week and a half. So, anyway, I like him. The price of it, buyers or sellers market, stay local. I think the stay local is probably as big as anything. Tenant shopping, the scariest part of rentals, and I don't really have any kind of desire for it. Can they afford it? Our lease with the government's beautiful, a beautiful blessing that we were able to walk into there. Will they pay on time? Again, there's one thing we do with our business is we deal with commercial, industrial, and educational groups. If they don't pay on time, it's normally because of paperwork or procedure. We know we're always going to get paid. And that's reassuring. I mean, there has been very few times where we thought, man, are we going to ever see that paid off? And it was one where a company was just kind of going under. And they owed us a couple $1,000 or whatever. And it's like, don't sell them anything more. They can use a credit card. We'll sell it to them. But otherwise, no way. But otherwise, we feel good about it. And I feel the same thing about these rentals. It's like, I know my kids are going to pay me. We're not going to pay them.
I have all your tenants working for you.
Yeah, right. And then the government's going to pay up, unless you got something that has to be done paperwork-wise that you didn't do or the wrong number on or something. So I don't know what you do, Paul, in your scenarios where you've had people you didn't know.
Well, I think part of that is what we talked about before, is you have a certain percentage on your calculator or your cash flow or your ROI, is that you figure a certain amount of rent loss. And, of course, rent loss is also tax deductible.
So okay.
That.
Okay.
But, or is it not?
Well, yeah, it's no income. Yeah, it's
no
income.
If you want to. But I also have my lease. After 30 years, I've rewritten my lease time and time again. And I have a penalty if you're 5 days late or more.
Okay.
It costs you $5 a day.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that's incentive.
Yeah.
Unless you communicate.
And that's all legal and stuff, huh?
Mm-hmm. As long as they sign the paper.
Yeah. That's an interesting idea.
So that's what I do. And they're warned ahead of time as they walk in the door. This is what it is. And now, if you're not getting paid till the 6th, and you know that ahead of time, and you know you had to replace your car or whatever, if you communicate to me,
I may
give you leniency, but it's communication. It's always communication.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
as you know, they're trying.
And very seldom do I get paid after the 5th.
Because of the $5 a day extra.
Yeah. So what about when someone is either just leaves, or how do you get rid of someone if they don't? Because aren't there rules that protect them?
Yes.
Like?
The only way you can really legally get rid of a tenant is to evict them. And if you're going to evict them, I know a guy that rents, and if they don't pay by the 5th, he starts the eviction process.
If they don't pay when it's due?
Yeah. He'll go right to the eviction process.
And he's told them up ahead of time, this is what happened.
This is what's going to happen.
No, nothing personal. This is how I've learned I have to deal.
If you don't pay me by the 5th, I go right to eviction process.
Okay.
Because the eviction process takes.
I'm going to say, how long does that take?
It takes about 60 days, if not longer sometimes.
So you could be a few months without rent, and they're still staying there.
Yeah.
And then is there any recourse besides keeping their security deposit if they do damage?
You could take them to court.
Oh.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Right?
What? I got somebody that owes me, I think I got the court case against him for, I forget the amount even, $1,300. And that's always going to hang over his head, but that's the most I'm going to get out of it.
Yeah.
But I did the court myself. Not like I have lawyer fees or anything.
Okay.
Have you gone through the eviction process?
What?
How does that, can you give me a little idea of what that looks like?
So you go to the courthouse and say, I'm going to evict so-and-so, and then you have to have that served to them, and it gives them a certain amount of days. Now, if I have an eviction, I have a lawyer take care of it.
Okay.
Just have him, I think it's $200 or whatever.
So non-payment or
non-payment,
if it's damaging
damages,
property,
any
other
illegal, unlawful activity.
Like
drug deals,
smoking pot in there or whatever.
Well, yeah, anything like that. You know, you can be nitpicky and find something. I mean, if they're not paying the rent, that's one thing right there.
Yeah.
And if they're not paying utilities, that's another thing to look on.
Do you have set days where you like go in and inspect the house?
No. I usually call them ahead of time, just because it's more treating them like a person.
You can't just say,
"Hey, I'm doing a surprise check today." You know, you're not a prison guard.
Yeah.
So, but you know, if I say, "Hey, listen, I have insurance company coming. I got to let them in the shoulder place. It'll be next Thursday at whatever time." You know, and then I'll typically go with them and whatnot. So.
Do you do things like just kind of regularly driving past the property to keep an eye on things?
Yeah, I'll go by and make sure that they're mowing the lawn and doing all that kind of stuff. And then typically I'm in that place sometime or another to fix something.
Have you ever had to get police involved because somebody wasn't leaving after the eviction stuff had been served?
No, they usually leave.
Okay.
Yeah. Or I have the right to go in there and start moving their stuff out at that point. Which I will.
After when? When can you?
After the eviction.
Oh, process is fine.
The date is set.
Their stuff could be on the front yard at the lawn at that time.
Okay. Yep.
Interesting. Have you done that ever?
I've done it once.
What did Aaron think about that?
She was pretty upset with me. I didn't get a very good Father's Day present that year. But do your homework is the big thing.
Yeah, well, and part of the homework, I think if you wanted to look, I just found this. It's there's nothing hugely, but helpful, is 9 ways to avoid bad tenants. Because I have, I'm not going to read through them, but I have heard that and been frightened away from that bad tenant scenario. When we rented the place. Up in New Auburn, it was first time we rented to what? A couple. Husband and wife? What's your recollection of that?
We rented to a couple, and they signed a lease for, it was either 6 months or a year. I don't recall exactly. And then they called us after being in there not near the end of the lease and said they were going to move out because they'd found a house to buy. And then we're stuck with, what do you do? But you don't want to force them to stay, and they don't want to be there.
Or pay rent when they're not going to.
So then we were living down here, which is, I think, why we wanted a full year, because we lived so 4 hours away.
Yeah.
So then we're in the position to try from down here to find someone
for up there
to rent it. And we had to have renters when we moved down here financially. We had to have renters up there.
To pay for what?
I think we still were paying on that mortgage.
Yeah, you still have a mortgage on the property.
Yes, when we moved down.
You sure of the extra land we bought after?
One or the other, I don't know. We still had to pay a mortgage, so we had to rent it. So that was a difficulty to do that from a long distance. Then we did hear from some Amish, I believe. Were they Amish people?
Mennonites,
who would move around as a group for their work. And so they wanted to rent our home for X amount of months.
And this guy, who was the Mennonite, was like their boss and maybe one of the elders in the community, in the Mennonite community. He preaches and stuff too. I mean, I don't know how they're all set up, but he was making the decisions that would affect these guys, and he's pulling out his checkbook, and I'm thinking, you know, and he's going to share his own, like, whatever they call their pulpit time, right, in their homes or whatever. But I'm thinking, I have so much more respect for what I'm seeing here than my experience has always been with, like, a pastor doing just his thing and not being as responsible for business and other financial things. I have so much more respect, and it left an impression on me even more so about the plurality of elders and the importance of that in a church. And what was our experience with
that? So that was a little more difficult. I think it was a group of men just living there all the time, so there was some damage done. It seemed like everything was so nice after we left, and the other people left, and not left so nice after they left, that was kind of... And then us having to go back up, because that wasn't even a year, I don't think, they were up there. So we had to go back again and try to find, and then at that point we decided to list the house.
Yeah, I don't think
difficult, but it had to be done. So.
Yeah, and it was a relief, actually. As I always thought, I never want to sell this place.
Yeah.
And then it's like, when can we sell this place? but it was a relief. But I don't think the Mennonite guys that were working, it wasn't like they were party animals.
No, no.
It was just they were workers coming and going in this place.
They were guys using a home that wasn't theirs.
Well, for what they're used to, you know, they're not used to carpeting and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So they just throw their dirty boots in the corner and they get swept up.
And I don't know what they're used to because they're Mennonites, not Amish.
Yeah.
And they tend to be more apt to be technologically okay with things. There was a Mennonite guy that was the head of buildings and grounds for Hudson School District years ago. He's just Mennonite, you know, but he was doing everything anybody else would do. So,
I read through this. I think this is pretty helpful.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. One of the things on the how to avoid the bad tenant, I did hear this. I thought this is good advice. It's like you meet with the tenant, they come to look at the property, but you always have in your back pocket, someone else has looked at this too. I've got an offer coming from them.
Yeah.
Even if you're kind of like feeling like, just it gives you your cards to play. Because if you smell something that doesn't seem right, say, nah, sorry, I already accepted an offer or whatever.
Because you can't discriminate.
Right, you can't discriminate, whatever that looks like. And but you can keep your options open. And I don't know. To me, it's like if you're going to rent this place from me, I want to feel good about at least going into it. Like we're going to be good for each other. I don't want to feel like I can't believe I don't want this person in my house. But what now? I got to rent to him.
Yeah. Right.
You know.
Well, and the application process that I'm doing now has been the best thing I've ever done.
Which is,
if you're interested in the place, you send me an application. And I keep collecting applications and going through them and looking up. You got to do your homework on these guys.
And which is part of this, what this paper said too, right?
Right.
So that's good.
What does the homework look like? And what are the big things?
Well, you got to be careful because nowadays it's all cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I call your old landlord, I'm not calling, you know, somebody that I know lives there. You know, if I know the owner of this house is, if I can look him up and say, okay, yeah, he owns that place, but I can do that and not have his cell phone number, or they're giving me the cell phone number, that could be their friend.
Yeah, right.
You know, oh, yeah, they rented from me. They're great renters. Well, they're their friends, you know. So that kind of thing. I guess probably the best tool for a landlord is CCAP, where you look up their court cases and
CCAP.
CCAP. Yeah. It looks up their court cases and stuff like that. Some of the ancient history and they've recovered from it, you know, since of their youth or whatnot.
Yeah.
It tells you the dates and stuff like that. And if they have a lot of problems with financial things, sometimes it's a divorce, so it's not their fault. You know, you got to be kind of careful, but at the same time, it'll usually tell you if they lived at four different places and all four different places have a court case with them,
you're
probably not a very good tenant. You know,
are you allowed to require proof of income?
They usually give me their bank.
Okay.
I think Masterson says, by all means, you can ask for all that.
If they have a place of work, I can call that. That's one thing I think is probably one of the better tools, is because you can actually call the place of work. They have a phone number that's other than, you know, than some cell phone number.
Publicly verifiable.
Yeah. And so, you know, you got to be careful not to rent just because they have cash up front. I mean, that reminds me of that other Michael Keaton movie. It's an old one. Where he's renting from Michael Mundane, or what's his name? Anyway, this couple buys this fourplex, and they put all their money into it, and they're trying to fix it up. And then Michael Keaton's character goes in there, and he says, well, I'd like to have the place, but... And he pulls out a big roll of cash. So he's like, well, yeah, he's got money, so I'll rent to him, you know. And then he ends up putting it back in his pocket, writing a check. Well, it turns out to be a bad check, and he pretty much torments the place until...
Beetlejuice?
No.
I'm just kidding.
So, Paul, you have an application. So, people submitting an application, is this something that you have created?
Yes.
Okay. And so, then your exact steps after the application comes in are to CCAP,
CCAP, and then I'll check out their references. I'll check out their usually CCAP is my first step, because you can tell a lot from that. And then after that, it's if I get down to this person or that person, work history, how long they've been there, what they do, all that kind of adds into it. How many kids they have, not that that stops me, but if they have a two-bedroom, they have six kids, that's not going to work. You know, it's going to, but.
Your homeschooling family will make that work.
Yeah. I'm sure. So that's kind of, I just go ahead and go from there.
Bank statements?
Yeah, they usually give me their banking information. I don't get really statements, but I can call the bank and see what their credibility is, or I can look them up on Credit Karma or whatever that is, too, sometimes, if they give me the, their Social Security numbers. So
they hand over their Social Security numbers.
If they don't, then that tells me that they're probably hiding something. I let them know ahead of time that anything that they send me is not being sold. Or, you know, it ends with me.
Yeah. So your question has to do with, these days we're told, never give away your Social Security.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That makes some sense. But.
Right.
So back to your made-up form, is that something you just can make copies that people can share? Or have you personalized it in some way?
Some people laugh at it because I have some questions on there that people think are
intrusive.
Questions like, can you mow lawn? Do you know how to mow lawn?
Oh, yeah.
Two of my questions. Are you going to consider yourself a tidy person?
Hmm.
Of course, they always answer yes, but the fact that I'm asking that tells them that, hey, this guy is worried about how the place looks, and you know,
and that's this person, this woman sees that too.
Yeah, I see that on here.
Even them knowing that you're kind of being particular,
yeah,
maybe we'll scare them. It's not going to work. I'm not going to bother.
Big thing is I always put no pets, and people will call you up. Well, I have a dog. Is that okay? No pets, and they know that if I'm staying with that, I'm going to be sticking with the other laws too.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't like that, probably not a good place for you to rent. And I would rather be empty a month or even 2 months than to rent to the wrong renter, because that would cost me more than 2 months' rent in a big hurry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the no pets thing. Tell you, that is maybe one of the pitfalls of renting to your own children. Then they want a pet or whatever.
Do you have a new chicken
lawn? House now smells like shepherd.
But, open the windows for a while.
Yeah, sure, like the smokers. House, right? You just open the windows and it should be good.
But yeah, you have to be kind of careful. I mean, and even some, I had a renter, they were an older couple, well-dressed, well-groomed, you know, they spoke well, whatever. You would probably picture them sitting in a pew of the church, you know. And I did some research, this was years ago, and I thought, oh, perfect. And they ended up give me the false name.
Mm-hmm.
And my neighbor called me up and said, hey, do you know your renters are moving? They're loading up the truck. The time I got out of there, they're gone. Mm-hmm. So their name must have caught up to them. So you never know.
And to make a whole life out of that. That's pretty impressive.
Well, there's a, there's a, another a girl who has a challenged brother. And she goes to these places and rents, and people are, you know, like, oh, yeah, I mean, she's got to be a good person. She's taking care of her brother and whatnot. And she pays the, I don't think she pays anything. She just lives from eviction to eviction.
Hmm. Wow.
Yep. And,
think about that.
The other guy, the guy that I told the story, told me the story was retired. So he watched her and he followed her, kind of stalking, really. Went to this complex where she went in, and she left, and he went in there and said, hey, is that gal renting to you? Yeah, he said, I was going to.
Renting from you?
From you? And he says, yeah, I was just about to approve her. And he told her the story. He says, I would have never known. Mm-hmm. But she was another one that would just get a cell phone number. And you call them up, and it's their friend. And, oh, yeah, she rented from me for years, and she's such a good person. So
to close, I guess I'd say a near and dear guy, who I won't mention who it was, but he said to me, "Yeah, I made a decision too quickly on the last renters. I know I kicked myself afterwards. I should never have done that. I knew I was acting quickly." And he had to get them evicted. I won't say who he was. But,
No.
Might have sounded like him, but no. But he and I don't know what little like safeguards he has built in. He probably would have been one of the better guys to have you speak to that whole tenant issue. But you were great, Paul. So I just know that he's had some bad experiences, you know, that but in the end, eviction, does the police officer show up when you get to the final day of conviction with you, or
typically they leave before that.
Okay.
But
the renter does.
The tenant. They know they're done. So they typically leave because they don't want me putting their stuff out in the front yard and not having a place to go.
Mm-hmm. Do they leave it with, have they left your properties with, like, giving you the middle finger by ruining stuff at all, or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But that's part of having a nice place and charging enough rent. I think that's in that.
Yes,
that
sheet, yeah, too. That was another recommendation.
You track what you wanted to, you know, what you use for, if your place is nice, they're going to want to pay more. And they're willing to pay more. You know, if the place is trashed and everything around it's trashed, if you're a slumlord, you're going to get slum people or people that don't care. They're not going to care about your place if you don't care about your place. So I always try to keep my places looking like a place I would want to live.
Yeah.
Would I live here when I'm done fixing it up? Yep, I probably would. And usually I've had great luck with that.
Rarely will they take care of it better than you, anyhow.
No,
they won't. No matter who they are.
No, that's
but
part of that.
If you get
part
close,
of that,
then you're good.
That's part of that maintenance figure that you're putting in your compute.
Mm-hmm. So, were you going to say something? Does that make you nervous about maybe getting a house given to you, or does it make you excited?
Doesn't make me anything right now. It makes me thinking about it.
Yeah.
Obviously, if that were the case, my mom would have to pass.
Yeah. Right.
I don't really want to think about it.
No, right.
But it definitely gives some steps if we were going to need to make that decision at that point.
Yeah. I mean, it's like all of these things in my mind, anything we've talked about, even if it just plants a thought for a future,
mm-hmm.
because, oh, I know what book I should read that book. Where's that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or I should go talk to Paul. Paul's been through this already. I'm going to see what he did. It's just resources and knowing what they are and building upon knowledge, you know.
A little bit of futuristic look, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can look at a place and say, hey, can I make this into a duplex versus a you know, single family, or does that make sense or doesn't it make sense, you know. And then rentals are up and down, too, a little bit. I mean, there is times where, am I ever going to rent this thing? And now I got people... I send out an application. I got 60 applications to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I'm never going to get through them all. But that's a good thing to have because
mm-hmm.
you can just eliminate, you know, a bunch of them off the top. But then you always, when you show, and I'm not lying when I say, no, I have another application looking at the place. So when you talk
yes.
about, you know,
yes.
introducing the people and doing a showing, always do a showing. And they want to see it, but I don't do showings like I used to either. Because we used to be, you put your number in the paper with your little classified ad. I'm dating myself, but they would call you up and, yeah, I'd like to see the place. Okay, well, here's the address, and I'll meet you there at 4 o'clock, and then they don't show up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, they do show up, and it's like you have no way of, you know that they're not going to be a decent renter. You know that from the get-go, you know, like they wear the same pajama bottoms to a showing that they wore last month and a half. You know that they're not going to be a clean person necessarily. So you, you know, so a showing is always good. But this way people will put pictures online now so they can see the place if they're interested in it. You fill out an application, then we'll do a showing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going there five times a day showing an application to, showing the place to somebody that is never going to qualify the application anyway, if that makes sense.
Well, even having to do an application probably talks half the ones out there.
It does.
But put in the time.
And then there's some people that just don't want to fill out an application unless they see the place. Well, then you're not overly interested. And they can drive by and see the place too, you know.
All right. That wraps it up. Thanks for coming.
What's up?